Good morning. It is time to get up with history in the making. Can the C's give another grade A performance on their way to a comeback no one has ever seen before? Meanwhile, here we go again. Kyrie speaks. We'll tell you what he's really saying and how it will ultimately involve LeBron and AD. And then, Aaron, we've got a report that suggests things are not what they seem to be. Believe it or not, they're even better. All that and more as we get up with you starting right now. Look at the big smile from Bruce Dickey. Diana's been hanging out with my new best friend, Aaron Rodgers.
Looking great.
We'll get the very latest from her. McNutt is here. That's not McNutt's. We got all the basketball covered. Who else is standing by? Let's take a look. Oh, the wind man is here. Oh, Vince Carter, Lewis Riddick, Dominique Foxworth. We are jam-packed this morning, and it begins with basketball and history in the making. Celtics at home tonight, facing elimination again, down 3-1 to the Heat. Boston, I'll remind you, has won four straight road elimination games, but tonight they'll be at home, which proved lately to be a disadvantage for them. So I want to show you two numbers. All right, here's the first one. The Celtics are an 8.5-point favorite tonight. Miami was a 13-point underdog in Game 5 just a few weeks ago against Milwaukee, and they won that game. So don't take this one for what it's worth. The number I really want you to see is this one. Teams in NBA history that have faced 3-0 deficits are 0-150. Right, McNutt?
Mm-hmm.
Well, guess what Greeny says? Change the graphic.
Woo!
This thing is going to be 1-150. I'm on record, and I'm doubling down today. The Celtics are going to make history, and they're going to work their way all the way back into this thing, and they're going to win it. Vince Carter has all the insight you could ever imagine. He's faced a 3-0 deficit. Windy is covering the series, but I will start with you, Monica. Is it McNutt's for me to say the Celtics are going to do something no NBA team has ever done before? They're going to win this series.
I think it's unlikely, but there's an absolute reason why we play the games. And I think that there's an opportunity there should this Celtics team really have figured something out. Honestly, Greeny, if this was almost any other team not named the Miami Heat who were in this same position last year versus the Celtics, I would give this thing a real chance because the Celtics are that talented. But to me, I just don't see Jimmy Butler allowing this team to be beat again at the same stage compared to what we saw last year. And even when you think back to last year's series, although the Celtics won, it wasn't just that Game 7 phenomenon where they sort of dwindled down the stretch.
Mm-hmm.
The Heat could rallied a couple different times over the course of that series and made it really interesting down the stretch. I'm not sure that that character trait has been completely erased, and we obviously know there's different leadership there for the Celtics this year.
Yeah, those who don't remember the way the series went last year, the Celtics had a 3-2 lead and a chance to close it out at home in Game 6, completely fell apart in the fourth quarter of that game, went back to Miami for Game 7, had a huge lead, gave away almost all of it. Jimmy Butler actually had a shot in the air that would have beaten them at the very end, and it didn't go. So history is not necessarily on my side, but I think talent is. So Vince Carter, let me come to you on that before I go to Windy, because he has so much. But Vince, you've been down 3-0 in a series before, and while you didn't come all the way back to win that, you did force a Game 6 in that. Take us through the mentality of a team that is facing that kind of 3-0 hole and how it starts to claw its way back into a series.
Yeah, it was to this to a Boston team that was very, very good, but we were very good as well, and with the Orlando Magic, and feeling very good about ourselves because we had just swept our way through the Eastern Conference to get to this situation. We 4-0 against Atlanta, as well as 4-0 against the Charlotte, Bobcats at the time. And it was just an easy way. So we were like, okay, we're ready to go. And I think we got a little too cocky, and Boston hit us in the mouth, and it was tough to recover. But we did not want to get swept, and we wanted to make it a game. And like everyone has said, just give us a chance. Just win one. Just win one. And just win one. And we finally got a win or two and got to Boston and had a chance. And then all of a sudden, they took over and they got it done. So if you're the Miami Heat, the Miami Heat, you want to go ahead and take care of business right now. You're very capable. You had 15 turnovers. You shot 25% from three. And their defense, Miami's defense has been great. You're going to have to defend. Boston figured out how to defend, and that's the little things, is turnovers, taking care of the ball. You know, Boston only had 10 turnovers. Jason Tatum had 5 of those. That is concerning to me, but that was the thing. We just have to stick together, stick to the game plan, and not turn the ball over, and, of course, you got to make shots.
All right, now Wendy has been covering this series for us. And Wendy, in our meeting this morning, you used a term that would have made Jerry Seinfeld very proud to describe what this series has been and thus why it is so unpredictable.
Yeah, this is a bizarro conference finals. I've never quite seen a series like this. Whatever is up is down. Your favorites are your underdogs are your favorites. It's kind of laughable that the Miami Heat are listed as underdogs. They have won 8 times as an underdog this postseason, second most all time in recorded history, that underdog has been this successful against the spread. They have blown apart the models for ESPN's BPI. The computer is basically run home to mama. It has no idea what's going to happen. And the strange thing about this is that the Celtics seem to play better when they're behind. It's something that I've witnessed over the last 2 postseasons. For a team that's this strong, it's unusual. And let me just articulate it this way. In the last 2 years, Greeny, they have 4 road elimination game victories. This is more than most Hall of Famers have in their career. LeBron James, the most decorated playoff performer in the history of the NBA in terms of number of series, number of games, points, finals, whatever, he has 4 in his whole career of those. They have 4 in the last 2 years. But they're 10-11 at home during that stretch. Do you know how hard it is to go 10-11 at home over a 2-year stretch in the playoffs? You have to be good enough to play in that many series, but how can you possibly win that many series when you can't win at home? And so that's why this doesn't make any sense. So if what you're looking for is for me to say that this could be historically a historic series and somebody could defeat that 150-point number, yeah, because nothing is making sense right now, but also nothing is making sense. So I'm going to show up and just try to figure out what's going on as it's happening.
All right, so I get it, and I like all of that. And actually, Wendy has sneaky big news that I'll get to in a second. But, Monica, here's the only thing I'm basing this on.
Tell me.
Is that in a series that has been this unpredictable, where nothing that we have seen so far has made sense, I'm going to go back to the one thing I think I know, which is without in any way meaning to disrespect the Heat. They've been magnificent. Jimmy Butler has been the best player, maybe in the entire playoffs, not named Nikola Jokic. And Eric Spoelstra may very well be the best coach in the sport. But the Celtics are the better team. There isn't any – all year long, they've been the better team. For 2 years, basically since Christmas of 2 years ago, they've probably been the best team in the NBA. So it doesn't make any sense to me that they would play as badly as they did in the second halves of games 1 and 2 and then the entirety of game 3. Some semblance of normalcy has to be restored. And I felt like that began on whatever night it was, Tuesday, whatever night it was that they won game 4.
Yep.
I've lost track of days here. and that it is just going to come back to what it should be. If the Celtics play the way they should, then there is no reason in my mind why every single time they go out on the floor in this matchup, they shouldn't win.
I agree with you, Greeny, but in theory, Vegas, our BPI, everybody that watches basketball, no one would have predicted that they would have gotten into an 0-3 hole anyway.
Right.
And so I understand you, and this is why it is very, very unique. This series has been a ton of fun. Nobody knows what's going to happen. Could the 1 and 150, as you predicted, happen? Sure. But to me, the other thing that we know about this series is, to your point, Jimmy Butler is on an absolute mission.
Yeah.
And his ability to rally his team and have those guys playing in their exact role effectively when it matters. And of these two teams, to Wendy's point, which team is more comfortable in a nasty fourth quarter? And it appears to be, not just in this series, but over the course of the season even, the Miami Heat. And so I know everybody likes to say it's the NBA Finals and it's 4 games, not 1. Well, the Heat only need 1 more.
Right. But they had to get their way here. And, Wendy, we have something I would describe as sneaky big news here about the potential for one player that we might not see tonight. Tell us the very latest on Gabe Vincent.
Yeah, so Gabe Vincent pretty significantly sprained his left ankle late in game 4. He's being listed as questionable by the Heat after getting examined yesterday. Now, that is actually good news to me because that looked like a doubtful out situation the way he turned it over. I'm sure the fact that it's the playoffs is playing a role there. He's been really good in this series. 29 points in game 3. He had 17 points in game 4 before he got hurt. If he is, even if he's able to play and he's not himself, look for Jimmy Butler to get more time at point guard. The Heat are already down 2 guards this playoffs, Tyler Hero and Victor Oladipo. They're thin at guard. So if Gabe Vincent isn't himself, Jimmy Butler with the ball more, I'm not sure how that affects the Heat, but it would certainly put the onus more on Jimmy to be a playmaker.
And then let me come back to Vince for the – go ahead, Vince. I can see you want to jump in. Go.
Well, let's not forget you have Kyle Lowry sitting on your bench as well, an NBA champion, a guy who in the beginning of the year was your starter and very capable of orchestrating your offense. I don't know if he can put up the big numbers, but at the same time, he's a gamer. He's a big-time guy, and he understands the moment in situational basketball. So I think Kyle Lowry will play a huge role in this, even if Gabe Vincent can't play and can't perform to that level as well.
I think that's a really good point. You know what? Let me leave it there for the moment. We have much more basketball as we go. We got to get out to the LeBron latest and everything else that's happening coming out of the Western Conference Finals and head into the NBA Finals. So this group is with us all morning long. But we had another game last night that was historic in its own nature. The Panthers looking to advance to the Stanley Cup Finals with a win to sweep the Hurricanes. Let's pick this thing up in the third. Canes down 3-2, 3.5 minutes to go, looking to keep it alive. Jordan Martinook, Jesper Fast, right place, right time. What a pass from Martinook. The Hurricanes tied at 3. So now we take you to the final minute. Critical moment here. Gustav Forsling with the puck fakes out Jordan Staal, and Staal trips him. Take another look. This is with just over a minute to play in the game, so the Panthers get a power play. We're 9 seconds left in the game, and it's Matthew Tkachuk. Look at the patience that he shows. The wait, the score, the celebration. Tkachuk with the goal, and the Panthers are on their way. They win it 4-3. They sweep the series 4-0. They get the Prince of Wales Trophy and advance to the second Stanley Cup Final in team history. The first was back in 1996, so they are on their way. And tonight, we have Game 4 of the Western Conference Final, 8 Eastern on ESPN and ESPN+. Stars hosting the Golden Knights. Vegas up 3-0. Coverage begins with a point, 6 Eastern on ESPN2. All right, coming up, as promised, will LeBron actually retire? Why is it so important for him to make this decision sooner rather than later? You will hear. Plus, what if I told you that a 30 for 30 has recently inspired Aaron Rodgers? He's talking New York championships, and you'll hear why next. It's Get Up on ESPN. Delicious, meat nutritious, and the snack that packs a real protein punch. Wonderful Pistachios, one of the highest protein nuts out there. Each 1 ounce serving has 6 grams of protein, giving you over 10% of your daily value. Wonderful Pistachios also come in a variety of flavors and sizes, perfect for enjoying with family and friends or taking them with you on the go. And you're on the go a lot, taking the kids to school, hopping from meeting to meeting, shopping for groceries. Well, the good news is, not only are Wonderful Pistachios a complete protein, providing all 9 essential amino acids, they're also great for all your adventures. So whether you're a pistachio purist who loves cracking open every nut, or you prefer the convenience of no-shells pistachios, Wonderful Pistachios has got you covered. Grab Wonderful Pistachios and elevate your snacking game today. Visit WonderfulPistachios.com to learn more. Hi, it's Mike Greenberg letting you know ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sportsbook of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me, plus many more. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today. New users get a bet reset up to $1,000 in bonus bets if your first bet doesn't win. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Get Up is brought to you by FX's Mayans. The final season premieres May 24th on FX. Stream on Hulu. All right, and I've been waiting all morning long to dial Diana. Diana Russini is here. She has spent the last week or so at the Jets OTAs. Diana, tell me all the things you have seen about my new best friend, number 8.
Breathing in that jersey air. It's why Aaron Rodgers looks so young out there, Mike. And look, the calf situation, it stunk from a media perspective. It was our first time we were able to see him out in the offense, and it lasted 15 minutes. The medicine ball put him under. But everything from what I can tell in the conversations I had, it's not a big deal. He took a vet day. They're going to be out there today for their final day of OTAs. But all is good. Nothing to be concerned about. I know there was everyone freaking out a little bit. But here's what you shouldn't be freaking out about at all. What this offense is going to look like. Okay, so Greeny, they are not changing anything about Aaron Rodgers. The Jets are smart enough to say, Aaron, what do you want this offense to look like? And Nathaniel Hackett and him, we know, have had a great history together. He's won MVP twice with Hackett calling plays. There is a comfort there. But it's the run game that's going to add some spice here. Breece Hall can get back out there by week one. And by the way, I saw him working out to the side during OTAs, which is a great sign.
Extraordinary.
He is an explosive, dynamic player that could really change what this offense could look like and obviously help Aaron Rodgers there. And then finally, what has Aaron Rodgers done inside this building? He has championed the messaging from head coach Robert Saleh and GM Joe Douglas. They are all on the same page. And here's what you always hear about from these great quarterbacks. They're not just players, they're coaches. And you shouldn't overlook the power of that, right?
Yeah.
So many coaches that I talk to in this league want to have their players take the accountability. I think of Teddy Bruschi all the time talking about the Patriots
right.
back then when they were winning all those championships. Bill didn't have to press those guys to be leaders. The players held each other accountable. And now there's a player in this Jets facility that is holding the players accountable around them. We're 4 weeks in.
Right.
It's happening already.
Right, and here's what I think. You know what? Let's not play the sound we were going to play here for a minute. Bring the guys in, because I want to talk about this, and then we'll get to that later. Rodgers was on with Adam Schein yesterday, and he said some interesting things about a 30 for 30. That's interesting unto itself. But
yeah.
This is the area I want to live in here, because I'll tell you what this is reminding me of, Dominique Foxworth. This is reminding me of when Tom Brady got to Tampa, which I think is exactly what the Jets were shooting for. Now, in that circumstance, they had an extraordinarily talented team. They needed two things. They needed a good quarterback, and they needed someone who knew how to win to sort of put together whatever pieces of it they didn't already have. And he had to do it on high school fields and all that stuff because of
the COVID
and everything else. But in this circumstance, the Jets are getting that, and I don't think we were assured of that. I mean, how many conversations did we have about, yeah, Rodgers is going to be a great player, but is he going to be all in? Is he going to be the leader that they need? All that kind of stuff. At least so far, I think that the signs have been even better than my wildest expectation might have been.
Yeah, I mean, I want you to be as high as you can be on that Jets. Good for you. I'm excited. However, I do think, like, this is like you got a new job. You're going to be on your best behavior. And it's not a knock against Aaron Rodgers. There's no way to do anything more than what he is doing right now. This is exactly what you want to do. And I think there's a whole bunch of value aside from him like vocally leading or even leading by example, just being there. And I think that's something we don't appreciate that much. Just showing up changes the outlook for this team. And players are a lot less likely to skip out on extra work because they know that if Aaron's there, they have a chance. So I'm not trying to downgrade the value of his presence on this team, but I also recognize he got a new job. Man, yeah. Whenever I get a new job, I'm the best employee I can be that first week. It's all downhill after that. I start cutting corners. You know how it is, Mike.
No, I don't. But I'll let you know. But here's the point that I'm making.
You don't. You're working a lot more than you ever have.
Lewis, with him, you kind of didn't know that for sure, right? Like, we really didn't know. Yeah. You and I, Lewis Riddick, I remember having this conversation over the course of time. Exactly what is it? What version of this brilliant player and this person is it that we're going to get? And Dominique is right. It's brand new. We don't know what it's going to look like 6 months from now. But I don't know that it could have begun any better than it's begun. What does it mean, Lewis Riddick?
Yeah, look, we had the conversation right out of the gate when we were discussing him versus Derek Carr, and it not necessarily being about, you know, the quality of the quarterback, although obviously that matters, you know, how good he is on the field, you know, how much he takes care of the football, makes good passes, you know, and how elite he is. But it was going to be like the quality of the teammate, of the person, the availability of the person. Is he going to show up on OTAs? Is he going to be there on the first day? Is he going to set the tone and say, hey, look, I'm invested in you. I'm invested in my new job in a way that maybe some people question whether or not I was invested in my old job, and it bit us in the rear end at the beginning of the year last year. Is he going to be different? Well, so far, this is exactly, if you're a Jets fan, if you're a part of Jets management, if you're part of the Jets roster, this is exactly what you wanted. You wanted him to be there. Look, I think they do have a pretty good culture already, especially on the defensive side. But the quarterback position in particular needed to be solidified. And now it's being solidified by a first ballot Hall of Famer, multiple-time MVP player, who has decided that so far, I'm going to invest in you exactly in the way that management wanted me to. And right now, everybody's giddy about it, as you should be. Let's just see if it's sustainable.
That's a really well-made point, Diana, because the Jets do have a good culture, But they didn't know how to win. And those are two different. Sometimes we associate those things unnecessarily with each other. They have a good culture, but they don't have a lot of people in that building. Most of them are very young and not that experienced.
And have never been around a quarterback of this caliber.
Right.
This is refreshing and new to everyone as they're all learning each other and growing. And you have to give this Jets team, their front office and their coaching staff, credit for not stepping in here and saying, we want to do it our way and adjust Aaron to how we see it. They're smart enough to recognize that Aaron Rodgers is a winner, a four-time MVP who has a Super Bowl, who's done it, and pays attention to those details, those small little things. That's the difference, and that's the mentality that Aaron Rodgers has brought in here. So, yes, the culture is good. They were building on some things, but now they've got the cherry on top of this, and they're smart enough to listen.
They've got a whole fruit basket on top of it, as far as I'm concerned. Go ahead, Dominique. You can continue to try and poo-poo this all you want, but I think it's un-poo-pooable. Go ahead, Nate.
I'm not poo-pooing.
You're poo-pooing.
I love it. I think that Aaron Rodgers is doing everything that he can right now. He can't win the Super Bowl this week. This is what you expect from him. And I also think it's a lot easier to get somebody to show up to OTAs that are outside of New York City than to show up to OTAs that are outside of general civilization, which is what they were asking for a young, unmarried, handsome quarterback to do in his offseason. I'm good. Let me go to a big city. Every now and then I can have a real fancy dinner and then go to work. So I think this is going to be a perfect match for Aaron Rodgers going forward. The real test of him and of this team is when they have some hard times, when they have some injuries, when they lose a few in a row. I know Aaron Rodgers is capable of coming back from that, and I think the groundwork that he is laying now is the groundwork that they need to lay in order to survive those times. But this is not a test. The first few weeks is not a test of someone's commitment because they are really kind during the honeymoon period.
I agree. And look, he's learning New Jersey, right? There's a lot to it. Some people think that there isn't. And, you know, look, he's not the biggest Sopranos fan. He said he's never really gotten into it. He's seen Taylor Swift at MetLife. Greeny probably got him the tickets. But he's going to learn about it. And I appreciate that he's like, look, this is my new home. And I have to figure out a little bit more here. And he's going to learn. And you know, I'm the ambassador of New Jersey. If he wants a tour.
That is correct. Diana's running for governor. We'll do more on this as we continue. I'm up against a break. We'll get to it as we roll on. But coming up, LeBron James hinting at retirement. You'll hear why the timing of this decision is critical. We'll tell you exactly what the Lakers should do next. Spoiler alert, it's the last thing you want them to do. That's next. It's Get Up on ESPN. We are back on Get Up, and the game, which is sweeping the nation, is called Is That McNuts? So here we go, Monica. If someone were to say, we've just seen LeBron play in the conference finals for the last time, is that McNuts?
I do think that's McNuts, Greeny. LeBron still clearly has a ton, has something left in the tank. And I think it's a matter of putting the right pieces around him. Let's not forget that he was navigating a foot injury the duration of this Western Conference Finals.
100% agree with that one. Let's see about this one. If someone were to say, Kyrie Irving is the answer for the Lakers, is that McNuts?
I don't think this is McNuts. And I know we're going to get into this, but in terms of the basketball of it all, this is not Russell Westbrook. I actually think it works. And of course, Kyrie and LeBron have history together. And it's been rumored for a couple seasons now in terms of them wanting to team up. The basketball of Kyrie is never in question.
All right, put a pin in that one because I'm going to come back to it shortly. But let's talk about Anthony Davis. If someone were to say the days of Davis as a dominant force on both ends of the floor are over, is that McNuts?
That would be McNuts, and I would ask them, why do they feel this way? We need to discuss it in some sort of basketball therapy. What Anthony Davis was able to do over the course of this Western Conference Finals run was continue to remind you of what he is on the defensive end. He's a force. He's a stopper. Everybody had to acknowledge where he was on the floor. He also had the capability to have scoring outbursts. He may not be a guy that does it at a high number consistently, but everybody's acting like he played terrible. The Nuggets are really good.
Okay, so that brings us back to where we were yesterday when J.J. Redick was here, and he and I had something of a debate over whether or not Anthony Davis can be the player to carry the Lakers or any team. Here's what J.J. said.
No matter how much we try to make Anthony Davis into this alpha, that's not who he is.
He's a fantastic basketball player, an all-NBA player, an all-defensive player. He's not an alpha, no matter how hard we try.
Right.
No matter how hard we try to spin the narrative. That's not who he is. He's awesome, but that's not who he is. And the fact that he's not the best player in the world, that or not the best player in the Lakers, that speaks more to LeBron not being human.
Okay, so this was a really good discussion yesterday, and every time we got to it, I kept saying we need more time for this, and unfortunately, the show was only 2 hours long. So I want to dive into this. Wendy, I'll start with you, because the historical perspective on this stuff, I think, is fascinating. If there's one thing of which I think I can be fairly accused in this, is that I am holding Anthony Davis to a standard that perhaps is unrealistic, which is to say, I remember a time when we thought he was on the verge of being the best player in the NBA. I remember standing at this wall, we call this the South Wall on GetUp, when the Lakers acquired him and putting together a list of the greatest duos in NBA history and wondering where LeBron James and Anthony Davis were going to belong on that list. Mm-hmm. So that is the standard that perhaps I'm, and I think what JJ is saying is, that's not a realistic standard for this player. Brian Windhorst, how do you see it?
Yeah, he's been a perennial all-star. He has a championship. He was huge in that championship run. He was great in this run for the Lakers, not every game. He has a decade-long career where he has shown flashes of absolute dominance. He has shown flashes of times when he is, you know, becomes a wallflower, and he has injury issues. Those are all who Anthony Davis is. I don't know why anybody expects anything different of him. He is extremely valuable as a player. The Lakers are very fortunate to have him. They gave up a ton to get him, and I don't think really have ever truly regretted it because they have a banner up there because of it. And just because he is not as good as Nikola Jokic, is not as dominant as Nikola Jokic, which we just saw that Jokic is the MVP of the two. Jokic is the guy who dominates every night. Doesn't mean he's not an incredibly valuable player who's probably headed for the Hall of Fame.
How about it, VC? What you obviously been out there on the floor with him, against him, all that sort of thing. How do you see it?
Well, you know why people expect it or think so? Because they've seen flashes of it. And then you think when you see flashes of it, what's the obvious? We want more. We want more. And we think that there's more there. And like everyone is saying, maybe not. Yeah, because there's been flashes. There's been times when LeBron was hurt. We said Anthony Davis needs to be the go-to guy. Anthony Davis needs to be the alpha. Now, when he did that, it was like, oh, can he carry that on the floor when LeBron's on the floor? He did that for a stint as well. So, yes, it's there, but that's not a sustainable thing for Anthony Davis. So I don't think I've said multiple times he needs to be the alpha guy for this team, and he needs to carry on that mentality. But it's, you need to put another star that has that with him like we've seen. So when situations like when Anthony Davis does not have it, you go on to the next. That's when LeBron was like, okay, let me take over. But as far as him being that guy all the time, that's not who he is.
Let me get Monica
okay
the final.
Because he's a damn good player.
He's a damn good player. No one is disputing that. But I think, look, I'm just old enough to remember a time when the expectation of him was to be more than a damn good player. There were a lot of damn good players in the NBA.
Right.
Anthony Davis looked like he was going to be the next great one. He looked like he was going to be what Nikola Jokic has become, Monica, I think is the point I'm trying to make.
And I understand that, Greeny, but on the flip side, did you predict Nikola Jokic would be as good as he has been?
Of course not.
And so I think to a degree, this is the experience of being a member of the media, a NBA fan. I think if we can't let go of who Anthony Davis is, grand scheme of things, in basketball and in life in general, when you start trying to be somebody you're not, that's when you run into more problems.
Yeah.
I remember standing here with you in February when LeBron James goes down with a foot injury, and we're all discussing this is an opportunity for Anthony Davis to lead. And he did. He averaged almost 30 points, 27 and change while LeBron was out, and helped that team get to a position that was able to have them ultimately wind up in the Western Conference Finals.
All right, that's fair. All of that is fair, and I think it's all a reasonable conversation. Now, I want to go back to the pin that I put in the conversation earlier. And I want to take you to Kyrie Irving's social media yesterday, where he addressed rumors about his upcoming free agency.
Stop mentioning me on Twitter. All y'all fan bases, stop mentioning me right now, please. It is still the Western Conference and Eastern Conference Finals. Can y'all please leave me the f*** out of this? Please, can I just be with my family in peace? Y'all got people at my dinner table discussing what my free agency plans are. I see all y'all mentions. Okay, I said it. I see all y'all stuff y'all be saying. I see all y'all fan base. I get it. I'm just as excited as y'all are. But you gotta chill though.
Okay, that's hilarious. I mean, I don't know where to begin. Table. He's literally sitting in seat one, row A of the game in Los Angeles the other night and wants us to stop talking about his future. Wendy, help me with this.
Actions over words. His actions have indicated that this free agency is vitally important to him. The Nets were going along pretty interestingly and pretty well midway through this season, and Kyrie Irving blew it up because the Nets wouldn't extend his contract to his liking. He had the option to extend his contract with the Dallas Mavericks. He has not done so. So I appreciate he doesn't want to be bothered at dinner about where he's going to play. That's reasonable. But his actions have indicated he cares very deeply and is very open to options once we get to July.
Okay. So if I were to say, let me go back to my McNuts, because Kyrie, I'm about to make the most ridiculous statement in the world. Kyrie Irving is a complicated individual. Right?
Wow.
So it's not easy to talk about him because there are so many elements that we are talking about. But if there is anyone that I could see it working with, that someone is LeBron James. And if you had put Kyrie Irving, I just magically put Kyrie Irving on the team that I just spent the last 2 weeks of my life covering, they would definitely have won this series. Kyrie Irving, with Kyrie Irving, the Lakers would have beaten the Nuggets as good as they are and would probably be the favorites to win the championship. So does it then make sense, Monica, that the Lakers should do whatever they can this summer to get him?
I'm not 100% sure they would have beat the Nuggets. However, I do think that the Lakers should diligently explore it. But the issue is going to be, one, the money, as Wendy has elaborated on a bunch of different times, and two, what's it going to cost you in terms of your depth? Like, Pelinka has said he wants to maintain the continuity. We all acknowledged how good the Lakers were post the trade deadline and what this unit looked like. Again, we're still talking as if getting to the Western Conference Finals thing is something to sneeze at. And so, would Kyrie make them better in terms of the basketball of it all? Yes. But are they going to lose the depth and the defensive guys that and the shooters that they've now put around LeBron? I'm not sure how that plays out.
Kyrie Irving instead of D'Angelo Russell, they wouldn't have won. They couldn't even put D'Angelo Russell on the court in the last game of that
series. If it was that simple, maybe it goes seven. The Nuggets are good, Greeny. I'm not ready to do
that. I'm not saying they're not good, but when your third best scorer is Austin Reeves, I think things have changed a little bit if you have Kyrie Irving.
I hear you.
Let me go to Vince Carter on all this. What do you think of it, VC?
I said the same thing. I feel like Kyrie Irving, yes, would be a great addition, but to what extent? What are you losing? What are you giving up? You know, because I thought Austin Reeves was fantastic. And I asked Wendy early, can you get Kyrie and keep Austin Reeves? But I also think keeping Rui Hachimura on your roster, because he's been fantastic for it. He brought an element that they really needed. Another guy score, yes. You know, you put all your attention to LeBron and Anthony Davis and even sometimes Austin Reeves, but then there's Hachimura, who's a big fella who can get you buckets, who can defend. You know, you can play different lineups, offensive and defensive with him, keeping shooting. Like, what is Kyrie willing to give up as far as money is concerned for the betterment of the team? Like, yes, if we can acquire you, yes, but will you take less money to allow us to go get a roster that is, you know, good enough to get us back to the Western Conference Finals, possibly to the finals?
Wendy, put some perspective on it for us. Again, you know LeBron as well as anybody does. You think LeBron wants it, and can the Lakers make it work?
Well, first off, I don't think the Lakers would necessarily would have beaten the Nuggets, even if they had Kyrie, because I think the Nuggets are awesome. But I agree, it would not have been a sweep. The thing I'll just say is this. We can go over and over the machinations that required. I will just say probably the best two teammates LeBron has ever had in terms of natural fit were Kyrie and Anthony Davis. I could see why LeBron would be very interested in that. The concept of Kyrie to be a guy who can create his own, handle the ball to allow LeBron to rest while either on the court or off or on the bench is ideal. The pick and roll partner of Anthony Davis is ideal. If everybody's healthy, that race car would be awesome. But there's a lot of things would have to fall into place for it to actually happen.
Okay, we have to have a whole separate debate over whether or not the Lakers would have won this series with Kyrie Irving on the team. What, did they lose every game by 3 points? I mean, they were right there with Austin. Or you were praying for Austin Reeves to get an open look at a shot late in the game when Kyrie Irving could have been doing all that. All right, that's an argument we'll have another time. As we continue here in just a moment, Lamar Jackson is back on the field for the Ravens. There's going to be a big change in his game. You'll hear what it is and whether or not it is actually exactly what he needs. Plus, college football? Can Bama bounce back? Can Georgia do something no one's done in 90 years? Is Michigan ready to continue dominating the Buckeyes? We'll have all that and more as we continue. It's Get Up on ESPN. All right, we're back on Get Up at a fascinating football development. For the first time in over 5 months, Lamar Jackson suited up for the Ravens as their OTAs continue. Jackson, of course, is a new offensive coordinator who has already made a big change to the quarterback style of play. And we can sum it up in two words. He's going to run less.
Running can only take you so far, you know, and I feel like with this new era of teams and offenses in the league, I feel like we need that. And Coach Todd Monken, what I'm seeing his offense so far is looking tremendous.
Do you feel like you're you won't have to run as much and that'll maybe be scaled back a little bit?
Absolutely. Absolutely, especially with the receivers we have. I'm not really worried about the yards as much. It's about us just winning. So that'll be all the winning category, if anything.
You know what I couldn't help but notice there as we bring back Neek and Lewis and Diana is here, Dominique, was the smile, the little smile he got on his face as he answered that last question. Like, it almost makes you feel like running less is, I'm not going to put words in his mouth. How do you interpret the way Lamar Jackson is reacting to this new offense and what it means?
Yeah, I mean, I think he's excited about it. They brought in speed and weapons, and I think the book on Lamar, not that anyone could ever stop him, but the way to slow him down was to blitz him. And when you blitz that old offense that was very kind of contested, the best outlet from that was like Mark Andrews, which is a great player, but he's not going to create consistently back-breaking plays. But now, when you blitz this Lamar Jackson offense, like from Flowers to Bateman to Beckham, and then Mark Andrews without a ton of attention, likely is another tight end that's really good in the receiving game. The result of that is if you miss a tackle, or even if you don't miss a tackle, you've got great playmaking, fast receivers, and man coverage when you blitz. It's a lot more dangerous. It's going to be a lot tougher for coaches, defensive coaches, to decide on the equation whether to blitz Lamar Jackson or not.
Lewis, I mean, I'll ask it to you as directly as I can. Is running the football less a good idea for Lamar Jackson and the Ravens?
It's 1,000% a good idea. It's a great idea. It's what they have wanted to do, I believe, all along. And they felt as though, you know, they just didn't have the personnel in order to spread this offense out and attack through the air. And they maybe didn't have the play caller that really was, you know, adept enough at getting that done. Well, now they have both. Now they have players, provided they stay healthy and stay on the field. And now they have a play caller in Todd Monken that, if you watch the Georgia version of this offense, is exactly what Lamar needs. It's going to be one of those that is still too tight end centric. It's still going to be 12 personnel centric. It's going to have a lot of play action. It's going to have a lot of move the pocket. And Lamar is going to be able to show people that, one, that I am more than just a one-dimensional runner, as some people still try to put him into that kind of box. And two, I'm going to prolong my career now, and I'm going to run only when I have to, which makes me doubly dangerous for a much longer time. When you sign him to the contract that you did, that's what you're hoping to get. You're hoping to get your return on investment for an extended period of time. They've set this thing up perfectly. They really have. Now the question is, can Lamar stay healthy for 16-plus games, and can Odell and Bateman and Zay Flowers stay on the field together?
Diana, is your sense of it?
I think the intentions are to keep him in the pocket and limit the run, but we know what his strength is. And I think it's innate for him to scramble, right? That they're not going to take away what he does well. And when you see him smiling and when you see him excited, I think he's thinking about his receivers in that moment. I think he's thinking, finally, I'm going to be in an offense where these guys are going to feel like they can eat. Right. And they're going to want to be part of this Ravens organization, because what have we been talking about all these years? Right. If you're a receiver, you may not want to play in Baltimore, knowing that the run game is their strength. And that's what they're going to do. But I'm still at this point, I'll believe it when I see it. I think the intentions are there, but I'm interested to see how this is going to grow.
And Dominic, just a quick final thought from you on this. It feels to me like Lamar Jackson and the Ravens have become the forgotten about team. We talk so much about Patrick Mahomes. Yeah. We talk so much about Joe Burrow. We talk so much about Josh Allen. With the obvious exception of Aaron Rodgers, who will be the best, perhaps Lamar Jackson's name should be reminded to everybody that it should be right there with the top quarterbacks in the AFC.
Yeah, he's an MVP caliber quarterback, and I think the way that this offense is going to work out, and of course they should not eliminate the run from the offense, because I think offense in the NFL is about how many different ways you can threaten the defense, but they just need the threat of him running. He doesn't have to run nearly as much, but keep the threat of him running, and I think the way this defense has improved, that this team is quite possibly is the best threat to the Chiefs coming up.
I think that is something everyone needs to remember. The Ravens have been that good when he has played. We've just been able to forget it because he's been injured over the course of time. All right, more on the NFL as we go. But first, I have to make a complete admission, okay? So a couple of days ago, we were going to do a 100 days to kickoff of college football feature with Heather Dinich. And then LeBron James said he might retire. And so we didn't do it. So here we are 2 days later, and we're going to do a just under 100 days until the kickoff of college football feature with the great Heather Dinich, who is going to take us through a notebook. These are the things that you should be aware of and thinking about if you are a college football fan. Heather, let's start with Deion Sanders.
People are paying attention to Colorado because 71 players have entered the transfer portal since August, the most of any FBS team since the transfer portal was implemented in 2018. A lot of people are wondering if this is going to pay immediate dividends for them, and a lot of people have some doubts. The next big story is Ohio State, Michigan. No other game in the country is going to have a bigger impact on the college football playoff than this one. Right now, the pressure is on Ryan Day. He's 1-2 against Michigan, but guess what? He's 32-0 against every other team in the Big Ten. Can they avoid losing a three straight times to Michigan? And then Georgia, the question is, can they do it again? Can Georgia become the first team since the AP poll was introduced in 1936 to win three straight national titles? They've got Brock Bowers coming back. They open the season with four straight home games. They've got four of their top five tacklers, but Greeny, they need a QB.
All right, so I guess that is the question. Where do they go at quarterback? Whoever would have thought years ago that we would be in this position, but here we are. They own the sport right now, but they need to reload at quarterback. Should we expect them to be right back there in the national championship mix?
They should be right back there because Carson Beck came out of the spring probably as the favorite, but he's going to continue competing with Brock Vandergriff for that top spot. And as I mentioned, they have four straight home games, all of which they should win. And so Kirby Smart is the kind of guy who's not going to be afraid to make a quarterback change if he has to get the best player on the field. They have an easier path to the college football playoff than Alabama does. Alabama's going to play Texas in a non-conference game, so it could be interesting there, but I would expect to see Georgia back in the SEC championship game and one of the top four teams.
All right, and then, of course, there is always Alabama, and they have to replace a quarterback by the name of Bryce Young. Is Alabama ready to reclaim sort of their place atop the, not just the SEC, but the entire sport?
Well, I had a chance to sit down with Nick Saban in his office this spring, and he told me that, yes, Georgia is the king of college football right now, but he said success is not a continuum for us or anyone else. They've got a pretty good program, so do we. But it is a unique challenge for Nick Saban because never before has he had to replace a Heisman Trophy winning quarterback and both coordinators. We'll see what happens there.
All right, so again, we are not 100 days. We are not 97 days. We are 98 days away from the kickoff of college football, and Heather Dinich is back with us here. We'll see you soon, Heather. Thank you very much as we look forward to all of that this summer. In the meantime, as we continue, the last 150 NBA teams to go down Love 3 in a playoff series all lost. Will the Celtics be the first to take it the other way? I'll tell you why history is about to be rewritten as we get up with you on ESPN.